Hello, Potters! Welcome to episode
160
of Crossbod, the podcast for all things cosplay. Welcome to a much warmer day, and we are much the happier for it.
Thank freaking goodness, though, we're supposed to get another cold front coming in, which, you know, that's lovely. When Texas is colder than Alaska, we got some issues.
I did note that we had snow in all 50 states, and I actually saw a lot of people taking advantage of it for cosplay photo shoots.
Which they should. That's good, because, you know, natural snow is a rare occurrence in some of those states.
I saw a really good Rey cosplayer on the RPF that actually took pictures in her backyard.
Nice.
Against the snowy backdrops. And I was like, that's pretty epic. Thanks, use Mother Nature!
Yeah, use those locations to your advantage, because you never know. I mean, Mother Nature can just turn on a dime like that.
Well, if you have a character and you have a particular backdrop that suits the character, it doesn't have to be snow. It can be just about anything. It can be a thunderstorm. It can be a beautiful, windy day. You know, if you ever want an epic cape shot, take advantage of those windy days, kids.
But not too windy, because I did that once with my Raven costume while we were at Dallas Comic Con, and my cape just literally was trying to strangle me half the time.
Well, it also does wonders for wig tangling, too, so...
Oh, man.
You have to find that happy medium when doing these spur-of-the-moment photo shoots, not to mention it basically has to be a costume you can throw on really fast.
Right? Because they only last for so long before you're like, oh, nope, that's it. We're done.
You spend 2 hours putting on the costume only to go outside and find that it's no longer windy or whatever you needed it to be.
That's like the Silent Hill foggy mornings. Like, it would be perfect to go to take like a horror character out there, but by the time you get dressed up and go out, fog's all gone. And that's nothing you can ever really predict.
And I've seen some really good photo shoots with spontaneous fog too.
Those are awesome.
No need for a fog machine. You just walk outside and it's all soupy. It's like, oh, I have to shoot my cosplay in this.
We've had a lot of spoopy weather recently too.
May as well take advantage of it and make great pictures. Plus you don't have to Photoshop them.
Exactly. By the way, I don't think we actually introduced ourselves. By the way, I'm Valerie. The other one there is Amber.
Hi. I'm the crazy one.
Are you the crazy one? I thought you were the straight man.
I am also the straight man.
Oh, okay. So you're the crazy straight man.
Yes.
Gotcha. I'm glad that we got our archetypes all figured out.
Woo! All right. Since you are actively working on cosplay, why don't you start us off with cosplay updates?
Yeah, since I don't really have any cosplay updates to provide, given that I was at PAX South last weekend, and I have been ungodly busy at work, unfortunately. All I've been doing really is continuing my beading extravaganza. The thing is getting longer and longer. I officially have one full set of beads done for a sleeve. One sleeve. Just one sleeve. Just one sleeve. I'm starting on the process of getting the second sleeve underway. That's really about it. Seriously, that's all I've done. I've been also looking around at a couple of other websites to try to find the beads that I need for the rest of the costume. So I really need these very tiny square jade-esque beads, and I haven't had any luck finding them. I think I found a place, and I'm checking around for reviews to make sure it's a legitimate website before I start spending money there. Because I need a lot of those beads. But yeah, other than that, that's all I've been doing. Beads! Your turn!
Well, sadly, I actually don't have any cosplay progress. And that's mostly because for the last 2 weeks, I have been focusing on family things. I have a very sick family member. And I've still been recovering from my surgery. And I'm still slowly recovering my energy levels, which you wouldn't think surgery would take that much out of you, but it really does.
It
especially
does.
Because it hasn't even been a month yet since I had my surgery. And I basically spent 2 weeks not moving at all. I only got up to go to the bathroom and eat. And so I finally, this week, have been able to get back to the gym, only to find that I have like no stamina right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I know this doesn't seem very cosplay related, but actually keeping yourself healthy is a big part of working on cosplay or being able to work on cosplay. Because if you're sick or unwell, you generally don't feel like working on it, or you aren't very productive when you do. So I've been focusing a lot more on my health and trying to get myself back into form as best as I can. And of course, work, I was actually at a competition, which, yay, I won.
Yay!
So that has pretty much occupied all my free time. As you can hear, I'm still sniffing constantly because I'm leaking out of my sinuses. So I'm really sorry for that if you guys hear that. But this week, I should be getting back to cosplay now that I'm basically getting myself back to normal. Air quotes there if you missed that. So that I can actually start, you know, getting myself in gear because Ulcon is coming up.
Woohoo!
And I need to prep for that. So, yes. Yeah, there is much to be done.
We have a lot to prep for that since we are running the Saturday cosplay contest this year and not the Friday one. So, my God, there's so much to do for that.
Running a cosplay contest is much harder than competing in one.
Oh my gosh, yes. I mean, it's still a lot of fun. I still get a blast out of doing it every freaking time.
Yes, there are only two of us. And yes. So it's like running the cosplay podcast on steroids, which is basically what a cosplay contest is.
Millions,
it's us doing this on steroids.
Millions and millions of thanks to the people that we convince to help us every year, because I don't think they understand how their hands make sure that everything runs smoothly, because we just wouldn't be able to do it all ourselves.
And when you hear people at conventions during closing ceremonies and they're always thanking, you know, whether it's the enforcers or the staff or the registration crew or security crew or whatever they name their people, it's not a lie. And they're not saying it just to be trite. Those people seriously do allow the convention to run smoothly. And you don't really understand it as an attendee until you've actually volunteered for a convention or been a staffer at one. It's a very educative experience if you're looking to find out what goes on behind the curtain at conventions and seeing kind of what goes on behind the scenes before, during, and after. So if you're ever curious, just reach out to your local convention and sign up to be a volunteer and help out. Because conventions are always looking for volunteers. I have never heard of a convention turning down volunteers.
Right? That's never been a case. Like they
unless
always
you
need people helping.
Yeah, unless you have something in your background that prohibits you from being a volunteer, like, you know, working around kids. But other than that, they always need help.
And it's a good learning experience too. It's almost kind of like if you've ever worked in a service industry job where you're having to deal with customers face to face, you know, the people who also worked service industry jobs, because they tend to be a lot nicer to you and they get it and they understand it. It's the same way as being a volunteer at a convention. Like, just by default, I'm a nice person, but I think I'm always extra nice to staff members because I understand what they go through and I always feel really bad for them. So I try not to make their lives difficult.
Plus, there's benefits occasionally.
Yeah.
Depending on the con, because they all set their own benefits, but working a certain number of hours can get you a free badge, can get you free swag, can get you crash space at the hotel for the convention. They can get you all sorts of benefits. I mean, you can even get discounts on the next year's badge. So, could be worth, depending on how much time you got. All right. So that's all we've got for cosplay updates. And when we have more updates on Ulcon, we'll go ahead and share them with you guys. For now, let's go ahead and move into the content portion of our podcast for this episode. Let's start with a PAX South review.
And this is going to be a very short review because it's not very cosplay heavy content per usual, especially this year. This year in particular, it was very, 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 very light on the cosplay stuff. Also didn't help that I had food poisoning the day before, so I spent most of the weekend being sick. Lucky me. Yay. But, you know, PAX is one of those events where it's just fun to go to experience the new games that are coming out soon. It's definitely, South has turned kind of more into hangout PAX. It's not as intense or as crazy as PAX East or PAX Prime / PAX West. PAX South has become almost like the place where indies are going, which is great. I have no problems with that because I like indie games. I like trying out new things that are outside of the AAA studios, like the big funded stuff. Their Capcom was there and Microsoft had a booth there. They did what they call Minecon. It was like a little mine Minecraft section where they had like Lego building stuff. You could play Minecraft. You could try out some of the mods that some people have made. And it was okay. It wasn't as done up as I would have liked. I think if they had actually went all out with their booth and made the booth really Minecrafty like, it probably would have been a lot better. But as it was just okay. It was fun to play with the Legos and kind of build the huge Lego stuff that they had going on. And the Capcom booth, it was just to promote Monster Hunter, which is coming out, I think, next week or the week after. And it's the same demo that was already been out. So it wasn't like it was anything new or spectacular. But everything else that went on there was straight up indie. Indie. No big studios. So South has really positioned itself as being the place where independents can go to show off their content to the public in a way that they can't on Steam or through forums or through Discord. And that's really kind of cool. PAX has always prided itself on having like an indie showcase for board games, and to have a convention space that is just indie video games is really, really cool. And I hope that they continue to go down that path. In the same breath, I think that they need to rebrand South as being PAX Indie. If that's the direction they really, really want to go, they need to rebrand themselves as that. And that also means giving more floor space to those booths so that way people can actually have a better chance to interact with the people who set up the demos and to do more games and stuff like that. It's not a traditional PAX event, and that's okay. But a rebranding would definitely need to be in place to make that happen. As far as panels and content, I didn't get a chance to sit in on the cosplay panels because, hey, I was sick. Woohoo, go me. Plus, I know the people who were running the panels, and I know I can always get the content from them later, so I wasn't too concerned about that. There were only 2 cosplay panels, I think, through the entire weekend. But again, it's PAX. You don't really go because of the cosplay. The cosplay that I did see there, it was cool. It was always great, but did not see anywhere near as much as I did in years prior. It was incredibly low key. And I don't know if it's because people realize, hey, it's PAX. You don't have to do the cosplay thing because it's not like you get anything out of it. The hallways are still kind of crowded, so it's difficult to bring in big, bulky costumes. You don't want to do that anyway. There's no cosplay contest, none of that stuff too. But then I'm also thinking it's probably because of the weather. The weather got stupidly cold last weekend, like even worse compared to last PAX. And last PAX, I was freezing. The wind was killing me when I was outside. This year, it was worse. So
we had wind chills of single digits.
Yeah, like, it was gnarly. And I'm really glad that even though I was sick, I'm glad I opted to not cosplay anyway, because I would have been miserable. I didn't need that mess on my shoulders. So I mean, cosplay I did see was really cool. It's always great to see people cosplaying. Probably my favorite panel was Acquisitions Incorporated. Of course, it was fun to finally get to see one live because I've been to a number of PAXs now where I've never had a chance to actually see it live. I've only been able to stream it afterwards when I've gotten home. And the energy in the room is so much better when you're actually there live and everybody's chuckling along. And even though I was a couple of sessions behind, they showed a little animated video at the beginning to help catch me up on it. And I was like, great, this is what I need. And I had 2 people with me who had never seen Acquisitions Incorporated before, and even they enjoyed it. So that was fun. The other fun thing that we did was called True Dungeon, which is like a live D&D experience. We did the full 2-hour session. Oh my God, that was a blast. I had so much fun doing that because I'm not a big D&D person, but it was a nice baby step into a more live action role-playing experience with D&D, and it was very accommodating to everyone. All of us in the group had either played very little D&D or have never played D&D at all. So we were all completely newbies to this. And even then we felt like we could pick up the game really quickly and we were immersed very, very quickly and fast. Fortunately, I did die at the second to last room because we ran out of time. But that's okay. I still had fun. At least the rest of our group made it through. So we technically succeeded. And I was an elf wizard, and I managed to get pants for once in my life as a mage. I was very happy about this. You don't understand, because pants are very rare for me as a mage in whatever game I play, apparently.
Donald ducks it.
Exactly. So overall, I had fun. I don't know if we're going to be returning next year, just because timelines, and this year it was really screwy with the weekend that it was on because we've just been so busy at work. I wouldn't mind going back again for at least a day to just go down, experience some of the new games, talk to the developers. And I think a day is really all that I needed because there wasn't as much going on at PAX this year that required me to be there for the full 3 days. I think a day would be plenty.
There's more to do around San Antonio than there is at the convention sometimes.
Mm-hmm. And I think in this case, that was definitely the situation. Not that it wasn't fun, not that I didn't enjoy myself, but it was like, okay, I've kind of already seen everything that I needed to see or wanted to see. What else is there? So I think PAX is going to get a lot of feedback about that this year. They're going to take it to heart. And I'm really hoping that they figure out what they want to do with PAX South next year. You know, do they go full on indie route or do they try to make it like East and West and have to bring in some of the big guns? Because the only way they're going to get like East and West is they are going to have to talk to big developers and convince them to come in and start showing off their wares. But yeah, that's all I got about PAX South.
Yeah, and sometimes it can be a little more relaxing to go to a con that isn't as cosplay focused.
Yes, very much so.
Because not every convention does a whole bunch of cosplay. And actually, some conventions feel, you know, obligated or forced to include cosplay when realistically, you don't have to have formal cosplay events. Cosplayers will make their own events, I promise you.
Oh, we definitely do.
Sometimes it's nice to have an official contest, but
sure,
just like panels themselves and cosplay parties and meetups and such, cosplayers will easily take care of all that other stuff. So as a convention, you know, you don't have to do all that stuff.
Yeah, and PAX definitely does not do any of that stuff, which is totally fine. I have no qualms with that. But it's also kind of nice just being a general attendee for a day and not have to worry about your costume. And about your accessories and about, you know, where do I stick my wallet and my purse because I don't have pockets.
Not to mention if you're wearing one of those bulky costumes like armor, or if you're wearing a costume, you know, maybe planned for the weather. So if you wear a costume with lots and lots of layers because it's 2 degrees outside, and then you get into the gaming hall where it's 80, you can't really like doff layers of your costume in the gaming hall. It doesn't quite work that way. So sometimes it's just easier to go as a casual.
I'm glad that I opted to do that on my second day of BlizzCon, because I thought about cosplaying both days, but the second day I was like, eh, let's just do the casual wear. And I'm kind of glad I did, because it allowed me to experience everything else going on with the convention that I couldn't have because I was in costume. So that was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
Always good to go cash.
Cash. Is that what the kids are calling it nowadays?
I think so. I don't know. Apparently there are some new slangs and phrases going on that I just kind of look at and go, wow, I feel old. I don't know what this means. Kids, why?
Sometimes we just like being old crotchety cosplayers.
We do. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all.
That's why we like going to gaming conventions, is, you know, so we can take a break.
I definitely have to say that as I've gotten older, I kind of like the gaming expos so much more than like the anime conventions. It's definitely more my speed and my groove.
And to each their own, because we all like different kinds of fandoms.
Exactly.
You know, Val and I tend to be gamers, but we are different types of gamers.
Oh, yeah.
She does much more video gaming. I do a lot more tabletop gaming and RPGs. But we both enjoy gaming conventions.
I have found out that True Dungeon is always looking for volunteers and helpers. And you could potentially get a free ride to Gen Con by being one of their volunteers helpers. And I'm strongly considering it.
Gen Con is always looking for DMs.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm heavily considering going to Gen Con this year.
Nice.
Just as a gaming person, since, you know, one of the other major financial expense conventions was dropped off my schedule this year. It's like, okay, well, now I can use that money should I choose to go to a different convention. And Gen Con is on my list.
I always hear good things about it.
Mm-hmm. Plus a lot of my favorite gaming, I don't want to say celebrities because that's not quite the word I'm looking for, but like gaming senpais are there. And it's always fun to watch.
Sure.
Because like you said, live shows just have a different energy.
They really do. It's the same thing with the Omegathon, because now that I've seen it a couple of times, both online and in person, like in person, it's so much better. So much better. You just cannot beat the coolness of it. Oh, congrats to Rug Pisser for finally winning. Man, that took him 4 years. Poor guy.
Okay, and we're not using Rug Pisser as a slur. That is actually his badge name.
Of yeah, that's his badge name. That's his gamer name. And I think he regrets that.
Hey, he finally won after how long was it?
4 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's been at it since year one. Poor guy. But he won.
Yes.
And actually, that looked like a really fun VR game. I kind of want to try it.
Uh-huh.
Look at how much I have accomplished in this little bit that we've been talking. Beads ahoy.
Yes. Going to pull this out for a quick second. There we go. Fix my desktop so that I can show you guys this. I will screen share.
All right, you screen share.
There we go.
You do your thing and the thing.
That application window is this one.
All right, share now.
Hopefully you guys can see this lovely little tinted bottle.
Yes.
Yes, I have a tutorial, or more accurately, a product review for you guys. This is a product called Tinted. It's basically a dye in a spray bottle that is made by Design Master. You can get it at most of your local hobby type stores. It's not just Joann's. You can get it at Michael's. You can get it at Hobby Lobby. You can get it other places. But basically, this is dye that you don't have to worry about boiling on your stove. And it's a dye that you can control the value of. In other words, if you want to make it light, then you just spray it very quickly. If you want to make it dark, then you can sit on it and you can do ombre effects very quickly. And so I wanted to give you guys a quick look at this. And so I chose blue. Hopefully you guys enjoy.
Hey Potters, today I have a product review for you guys. I know we haven't done one in just a little while, but at the Joann's, when I was there to pick up fabric and of course all things cosplayers need, I happened to find this thing called Tintit. And this is by Design Master. See, it's a fairly large container. It's 10 ounces. You know, compared to the size of my hand, it's quite large. And this runs you about $7 last time that I purchased one. Now, that could have changed in the meantime, but of course, Joann's has coupons, and you can always use those to drop it by 40 or 50%. So there is that. And what Tinted is it is a transparent spray dye. So if I take off the cap like that, you see it looks kind of like spray paint bottle. It even rattles like one, too. And it claims that you can spray this dye on all sorts of things, including paper, fabric, wood, and more. Now, it does note on the back, if you do read the instructions, which I really hope you guys do whenever you buy products that you've never used before, that this does contain acetone. So if you have products that are sensitive or react poorly with acetone, then you probably don't want to get this guy anywhere near it. Now, the instructions do mention that you can use it on styrofoam. And styrofoam doesn't always react really well with acetone. So your mileage may vary if you choose to use it on styrofoam. But I have four different things that I wanted to go ahead and try it on and show you guys for today. So I've got some plain old craft foam. I've got some styrene, which sometimes doesn't react well with acetone, so this may be a little iffy. I have some regular cardstock, since it says it can be used on paper. And then I have a scrap of fabric. This is actually crepe-back satin, and I chose pink specifically because it'll be a little easier for you to see the dye as it changes colors. I didn't have any white spare, what can I say? Everything else I had was white, just not my fabric, because I use my white fabric. It does mention use this in a well-ventilated area, so make sure that you don't use this, say, inside a bathroom, unless you have a really good ventilation fan. And it also says to cover the surface that you're using, so I have done that. Since I'm doing small samples, I went ahead and just covered a small area. But obviously, if you have larger, you're going to want to cover your entire surface with something like newspaper or something that you don't care about, like maybe a drop cloth. So there's that. I'm going to spray just a little bit to kind of open it up here. Oh, there we go. Yeah, it does smell kind of strongly of acetone. No, I am not getting high off of this. You guys don't have any thoughts like that in your head. I was just kind of wafting it near me as I sprayed it. So you can see that it's already staining the paper a little bit. Hopefully this does not stain my craft table. Now, whenever you're working with styrofoam specifically with this spray, it does mention to keep it 18 inches away. That is quite a distance, 18 inches about yay far. So you're going to want to do this in a much larger area if you're using styrofoam. Now, what you can do with this specifically is you can get a sort of gradient effect that they describe where you spray multiple layers on, kind of moving up the piece toward the darker area that you want. I'm not quite sure how well that works since, as I'm even looking at the paper here, this goes on fairly dark. This does not seem like it goes on very light at all, especially for something that claims to be a transparent dye. So I'm going to scoot my items over here for just a moment so I have a little bit more room. I'm going to scoot this closer to you so that you can see it a bit better. Thankfully, there is no smell-o-vision so that you guys cannot smell the very strong acetone scent this is giving off. Whew! That tastes terrible too. All right, so I'm going to start out with a styrofoam, just so that you guys can see coverage and such. So you can see how dark that is already. This is not a light dye at all. And it does actually go on a lot like spray paint. Because I'm going to hold this up, at least the part that I can that's not wet. There we go. You can see it's kind of, I don't know, what's a good word for this? Pixelated? You can see that there's definitely an uneven coverage here that you get with a lot of spray paints, which is why with spray paint you have to give multiple layers. So this does give a good shading effect if that's what you want to use it for, but obviously this is not good for doing very light dye jobs. And this does note that it dries in minutes, so that this should be dry fairly quickly. And what I'm going to try and do here, because styrofoam, or in this case craft foam, is a sponge, it is porous, it absorbs, it should basically suck up all the paint like a sponge. So this should be fairly dry fairly quickly. So what I'm going to try and do, and I am shaking it because rattle cans, you have to do that just to ensure even consistency. I'm going to try and get that sort of gradation effect here. Okay, you can see the spotting. I will show this to you. You can see the spotting there on the left. So this does spot like rattle cans do as well if you don't have a good nozzle, clean nozzle on it. But you can see I kind of got a sort of gradated effect there. It takes a lot of finesse and control to do it that way though. So I would not recommend doing this on small pieces at all. I would also not recommend, if you're going to do the gradation effect with the spotting, you're going to want a piece where you can clean that off. Because with foam being the way it is, because it is a sponge, I cannot get rid of those dots now. That is set into my piece. So if I were trying to do gradation on, say, a white piece of fabric, and I had that spotting, I would have to start over. So that's definitely a con for tinted, at least as far as I am concerned. Now, pro is that, it didn't take very much material to get this effect, and it was very quick to use, so that is also a good thing. So I'm moving on to styrene here. This is much less porous. This has a matte side, and it has a shiny side. So I'm going to go ahead and do both for you. I'm going to start with the matte side. So here's the matte side. I like that. I'm trying to center this so that I don't get any on my table. Shake, shake, shake. You see again, there's the spotting. Okay, so I have a fairly even coat. Ideally, what they want you to do is parallel lines like this, going straight across, like this. But even as I'm doing that, you'll note this kind of watery effect. You see that by my finger where I'm holding it? That's where you get an excess of paint built up. It's really easy to do with this. This is actually acting a lot like rattle can spray paint. And even with rattle can spray paint, sometimes I have trouble getting really even coats if the item that I am spray painting is not porous or has a very odd surface to it, which this is, again, the matte side of the styrene. This isn't even the shiny side, even though it does have a little bit of shine to it. So because the styrene, oof, I got some on my finger. That does not come off very well. Ugh, you can see that. It doesn't come off very well. It's like permanent marker. So with this, because it is not as porous as the foam, the paint kind of seems to sit on the surface and gather like water. So the tinted may not be as good for surfaces, and I have a feeling that the shiny side is going to confirm this, that aren't porous. So, rattle, rattle, rattle. See, it's a little bit spotty. I'm trying to do somewhat even coats on this. Okay. So you can see here. I'm going to try and pick this up here. See, it has a nice shine to it, but you can see again near my thumb there, you see where the paint gathered, where it's not quite even. Again, this gives a really good tinting or a shading effect if that's what you're looking for. So in this particular case, I'd say that if you wanted to weather something, if you had a can of black and brown tinted, you could probably actually get a decent weathering effect using this stuff. Okay, so yeah, I got a little bit on my finger there too. So I'm guessing that this is primarily meant for porous materials like, say, paper, like what I'm holding, and fabric. So here's paper. You can see this is going on much more lightly and evenly, and I have a feeling it's because of the porosity of the paper. Now this is completely matte cardstock. This is not shiny cardstock. So if I wanted to get the gradient effect, I would simply spray more layers and then just kind of back off near the other end, like this. You can see it's gradually getting that effect. Multi-layer, and it looks like you can do multiple layers. However, if you watch in the upper portion of it, the paint is actually soaking directly into the paper at this point. The paper is saturated, so I can't do any more layers on that side. So there does come to a point where, even with porous materials, you can completely soak it and then it won't hold any more paint. But you can see I did actually achieve a pretty decent gradient without having to wait too long. As far as affecting the feel of the paper, on the side where it's very thinly painted, I still have a very firm cardstock. If I go over to this other side, surprisingly, I still have a very firm cardstock. I expected it to be a little bit limp and floppy because of the paint, but surprisingly, this is actually still fairly firm. It's a little bit wet and a little bit floppy right underneath here where you see that big dark pool in the center right here. But other than that, this doesn't seem to affect the structural integrity of the paper as much as I thought it would. So that's the test for the paper. And last but not least, another porous item here. And of course, this being crepe back satin, I do have a shiny side. And I have a matte side. So I will test both. Alright, so you can watch. So you can see it's very distinctly changing colors. That was kind of the whole point of what I wanted to show on that side. Now this did not turn, it's a little hard to pick up because the paper's all covered in paint now. This did not really turn a purple, which is kind of what I was thinking it might do, since this is pink, which is red based, and I just sprayed blue on it, so theoretically red and blue make purple. This is not a very purple piece of fabric. This is actually a gray piece of fabric, honestly. So if you want to end up trying to get a particular color by using the color wheel, it does not quite work that way, as I am seeing. So this is the shiny side. So rattle, rattle, rattle. All right. Now the coverage is very quick on the fabric. It's actually even quicker than the paper. I have completely covered that piece in blue. Now I'm going to go ahead and try for a gradient. Okay. Darker near the bottom. Okay. So this does somewhat, I'm going to pull this out hopefully so that you can see a little bit of it, like that. You can kind of see the gradient there. It's a little bit lighter near the top of the triangle and then darker near the bottom. What I'm going to try and do as my last test is I'm going to saturate it. I want to see if I can completely change the color of the fabric to basically match the royal blue that is on the bottle. So I'm going to move this back toward the center so that I don't spray my table. There we go. And I'm going to saturate this. Now I'm about 6 inches away. I'm doing nice, even parallel strokes. I see that the fabric is basically saturated at this point because the paint is starting to soak into it and it kind of pools a little bit on top. That's how I know that I've hit the saturation point. No more paint's being absorbed. So I'm gonna cap this. At this point, the smell of acetone is actually really strong, you guys. So again, if you're going to do this for long periods of time or a lot of stuff, you're going to want to go outdoors or someplace that's really ventilated. And I'm going to have to wash my hands for sure. All right. So this is still wet, but you can see I have successfully changed this fabric from a pink to, well, I guess you could call this a cobalt blue. It's a little bit different on the camera than it is in real life, but it is still, it's just as shiny. So there's that. That way you can see it a little bit better across the, you see I got it all over my hands. So this does stain your hands like Kool-Aid. So make sure that you wear gloves, kids, just like you would when you're dyeing anything. But there you go. And I'll wipe this off for just a brief moment so that I can hold the tinted bottle so that you guys can see this. This is the sapphire color of tinted. They do come in many other colors of the rainbow, if you so desire. And this is by Design Master. You can find it at Joann's and probably more of your happy hobby retailers, all of your favorite craft shops, as well as online. Runs you about $7 for a 10-ounce bottle. And let me know what you guys think of this. Let me know what you use it for. We're always happy to hear the projects that you guys are working on.
Thank you guys for watching that. Hopefully you enjoyed it. As with all things cosplay safety, I would like to say that if you are using anything that uses accelerants or smelly type chemicals, please make sure you're doing it in a ventilated area and please don't do it in your kitchen.
Oh God, please don't.
You know, this should be common sense, but don't bake non-foods in an oven that you're going to use for food. Don't spray things around where the smell is going to linger inside your kitchen and flavor your food. That sort of thing. And don't use cooking pots to cook chemicals that you shouldn't be eating if you're going to cook things you will be eating in the same pot.
Do you have to let it linger? I just had a sad.
No cranberries.
I know, sad face. I just had a sad. But you said the word.
sorry.
It's okay.
But one of the nice things about this dye is that, you know, speaking of stoves, you don't have to boil anything.
Yeah, that's always a big plus. Anytime that you have to dye, it always requires a lot of hot water and a lot of time.
Yep.
And salt. And it's just a pain in the butt.
It's a pain and you have to worry about consistency because the only thing you can really control is the temperature of the water and how long it's in there. And maybe the amount of salt. But and then you can't control how the dye actually goes into the fabric. Whereas with the spray dye, you have control over how much goes in. Not to mention that you can also use it on a ton of things. It doesn't just have to be fabric. You can use it on wood. You can use it on plastics. Probably doesn't work very well on metals, I'm guessing.
Probably not. We also have to be concerned, especially when you're having to do standard dyeing, is the stuff that you're putting your fabric in, will the dye stain it? There have been many stories and many situations where dyes will stain stuff. That's part of the reason why I moved on to my cooler dyeing, because I don't care if anything happens to the cooler, if it actually does get stained, and something about the non-coated, non-stick material on the inside of it allows me to clean it really easily that I haven't had a stain issue yet. So,
yeah. If you are living in an apartment or in a place where you do not own the bathtub,
right?
May I recommend not dying in the bathtub?
Probably not a good idea. You probably want to go with the stove. Yes, that's Be safe the entire time, but oh my gosh, yes.
And likewise, if you're using a washing machine, even if you own the washing machine, you probably need to run a cycle after dyeing with nothing in it.
Yes.
To clean the tumbler on the inside so that the remnant dye that you have washed off does not get into the rest of your laundry, which will also dye.
That is a real thing, guys. It's not a joke.
It is a thing.
A real thing. Yes. Unless you're okay with your stuff being permanently stained forever.
Yes, it really does not take very much dye because it's so concentrated.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're saying all these warnings. You can dye things, guys. We're not trying to scare you away from dyeing. We're just saying follow the directions and be careful.
I am the master of dyeing things. I love to dye spandex, which confuses everybody when I like, yes, you can dye spandex. Here is how.
Mm-hmm. You can dye nearly any kind of fabric.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing you need to worry about is the content of the fabric to make sure that you're getting the right kind of dye because it's a chemical reaction. And you need to read the directions so that you know how long to keep it in there. And if it has any sort of special finishes, you may need to remove the finish on that fabric so that the dye soaks in. Really, that's it. Otherwise, you know, go hog wild.
It's kind of like a fun science experiment too, just to see, you know, mix and match, you know, how much color do I need to get it to look like this? Do I need to take less out? Do I need to add more? Do I need to do this? Do I need to do that? You can actually mix colors too, which can get some really cool effects that way. Dyeing is a ton of fun. I enjoy it. You just have to be careful while you're doing it. That's all.
And it's always good if you don't know quite what you're going after. Like you may know what color you want, but you don't necessarily know how to get there. Jot down exactly what you use, how much salt you put in there, how much dye that you used, how much water you used, how long did you leave it in there, and just write it down on a little index card or a post-it note or something so that way if you need to do it again later on, you can replicate exactly what you did.
Always, always, always take notes.
Mm-hmm.
It is a
it's very scientific. A lot of cosplay is just math, kids.
It's math and science, babies.
They were like, when am I ever going to use this? This
cosplay.
Is when you use this. This is when you get to use math and science.
I wish I was told this in middle school and high school because I think I probably would have paid more attention to my math classes.
I don't know. I ended up having to learn calculus, which did not help me at all in cosplay.
Calculus was like the one thing I was always really good at, but I have yet to use it, which I'm kind of bummed out about.
See, I was really good at algebra, which I use all the time.
Ah, I was not very good in algebra. I had a good teacher, but I just could never get it to stick properly. But c'est la vie. I can live.
All right. Well, that's all that I've got.
It's all I got, too. I'm just, look at all the beading I have done. This is amazing.
So for now, we will say that's all, folks. If you guys would like to give us suggestions for future episodes, or if you have commentary on anything that we covered in this episode, you can contact us via any of our social media, which you can find here.
Don't forget our new Discord link. Hey!
Yes, please do join us in the Discord. We do chat about all sorts of things cosplay. And you can also email us, podcast@cospod.org, and you will get a response from each of us, because that's how we roll.
It's always how we roll.
And of course, if you'd like to submit pictures of your cosplay in progress, we really enjoy seeing those as well. We do simply ask that you keep them family friendly. Because occasionally we do share them on our Facebook page, if we have your permission. But other than that, we will see you guys in episode 160 for Cospod, the podcast for all things cosplay. Happy cosplaying, everybody.
Bye, everybody.